Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You are listening to the Motherhood Unstressed podcast, and I'm your host, Liz Carlisle. Welcome back. Welcome to a fresh week. I'm so glad you're here, as always. This week, I have an incredible guest on the show, someone who is absolutely turning tragedy into triumph. And I feel like sharing stories like these not only uplift us, but inspire us and show us how strong we can really be in the darkest of times. So this week I'm speaking with Stephen Johnston. He's a father, radiologist, nonprofit founder, and Ironman athlete who faced his son Luke's life-altering diagnosis with resilience and determination. At just 7 years old, Luke was diagnosed with a rare disease that, with no medical intervention available, would face the prospect of slowly losing his vision, eventually leading to blindness in his teenage years. Undeterred by the daunting prognosis, Stephen embarked on a mission to save his son's sight. Connecting with a UK-based researcher on the cusp of human clinical trials for potential treatment, Stephen founded A Race Against Blindness to raise $1 million for sight-saving research. Through his relentless efforts, Stephen has raised over six figures, garnering attention from major media outlets like GoodMorningAmerica.com and various TV news stations. His story is not just about fundraising, it's about finding purpose in adversity and redefining resilience as a parent. In this episode, Stephen is sharing invaluable insights on parenting through tough situations, setting a strong example for your children, and navigating co-parenting post-divorce, especially when faced with an unexpected challenge like a serious medical condition. So like I said, I love having guests on who are truly setting an example of how strong a human being can be, no matter what's going on in your external environment. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I hope you're inspired like I was. So please enjoy this episode with Stephen Johnston. Well, hello, Steve. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you're here.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. So as I always do when I start off the interview, I'd love to get kind of a bird's eye view of the guest's life experience and how it led to the work that you're doing now, specifically in your case, how adversity led to finding your purpose.
Absolutely. Yeah. So my name is Stephen Johnston. I am a 40-year-old dad in Gilbert, Arizona. And I had what I would call a pretty normal life leading up to just a couple of years ago. And I got the diagnosis that my son has a rare genetic condition that is causing him to slowly lose his vision. And he's expected to go blind by his teenage years. And that set off a cascade of events that led me to start a nonprofit and really take on a new meaning in my life.
Yeah. And I don't want to mispronounce it or mess it up. What is the exact name for this? Because I know, it is rare, but there are people all over the world dealing with this.
Right. So the overarching condition that he has that has to do with his vision is called retinitis pigmentosa, which is a group of conditions, really. It encompasses numerous underlying genetic causes that cause the syndrome of retinitis pigmentosa. His genetic cause, the version that he has, is caused by Bardet-Biedl syndrome, which is a super rare disease as a part of a bigger cause of, the retinitis pigmentosa, which in and of itself is a rare disease. So it's a rare disease of a rare disease, basically.
Wow. And then how did you find out that this was happening? Was it just all of a sudden, like a regular doctor's appointment, or was it a long process?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story, actually. So he was born with six fingers and six toes. So he popped out, and I famously said, "What's that?" Which got me in a little bit of trouble. And we kind of immediately knew that something was up, of course. We went through a series of genetic tests at the time and saw many different physicians, and there was really nothing else that we could find that was going on at the time. And so they basically just said, well, let's just wait and see. If anything else pops up, then that'll give us some more things to test for. And that's kind of what we did for a long time. And, you know, he had an essentially otherwise normal childhood for a long time. You know, he had some basic stuff like some learning delays. He had some speech therapy and, you know, stuff that's very common for a lot of kids. So nothing that really rose to the level of, you know, raising concerns or anything else that we needed to test for. And then a couple of years ago, interestingly, we thought he might have dyslexia for a little while. So we ended up going to a vision therapist, and that kind of set off a little pathway of, well, I wonder if there's anything vision related with his extra finger syndrome. And I'm like, okay, so I start researching polydactyly and vision issues, and just happened to come across this Bardet-Biedl syndrome. So I have a healthcare background. I am a physician, and I was like, wow, that could kind of fit. I wonder if that's something he might have. So I literally went into the optometrist's office, and I was like, hey, have you done any retinal tests with him? They're like, no, why? I'm like, well, I'm kind of worried he has this rare condition. They're like, they kind of looked at me like I'm crazy a little bit, you know? And sure enough, they did the test that I asked for, and there were some retinal abnormalities. And then they referred us to a different pediatric ophthalmologist, who then referred us to a pediatric retinal specialist. And that pediatric retinal specialist is the one who confirmed that rare thing that I thought he might have was indeed what he had. And we had a genetic test done that confirmed it. And so that's when we found out. So it was a little bit of a interesting story, kind of beginning in birth and then slowly coming to fruition a few years later. When he got the diagnosis, we really didn't have a lot of other concerns about his vision in terms of vision loss or anything like that. And we caught the diagnosis a bit earlier than maybe some other people would have. And then we started to see the vision loss start to happen after we got the diagnosis, within, you know, the first 6 months of knowing about it. And then it's progressively continued in the last couple of years since we had the diagnosis. So it's been very hard to watch happen and kind of have in front of our face. So it's been a hard, challenging couple of years.
Yeah. But I love how you didn't just let it sit with you. You didn't just accept it. You said, okay, I need to do something. Can you talk about the formation of your nonprofit, where the name, the idea for the name came from, and the drive that really keeps you going each and every day to fight for change?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when we got the diagnosis, I really feel like there was a very typical grieving process that was gone through. You know, you get a tough thing thrown at you in life, and you go into, you know, this pain and this denial. And then kind of you go through a little bit of an acceptance, and then you kind of start to come out of the other side of it. And through that process, one thing that I really realized was that I was not okay just sitting back and doing nothing. Basically, we were told he's going to go blind and there's nothing you can do about it, because there's no treatment, there's no cure, there's nothing to do. And that didn't sit well with me as a physician, as a dad, as a man, all the things. And I just could not just do nothing. So I was like, well, I don't know what we're going to be able to accomplish or do, but we're going to do something about it. And that led us to take action in the form of starting a nonprofit. And we started that about a little over a year ago now. And the nonprofit's name is A Race Against Blindness. So there's a couple of different underlying meanings with that. So the name implies we are racing against blindness. We're racing against time. He only has so much time left where he has some preserved vision before he could go completely blind. And that's the same situation for anybody else in this condition, that they're all, you know, racing against the clock to find hope, find a cure, all these different things. So that's one part of it. And then as a family, my ex-wife and I both are very active and physically fit. And we decided we were going to do racing as one of our awareness things. So we took on Ironman racing as a part of our awareness and kind of just being an example for the kids of showing them how to do hard things and taking that on. So that there's that kind of dual meaning that we put behind it, but that's our name and that's how we founded it.
I love it. I love it. And have your children said to you directly, like, wow, this is amazing what you guys are doing. Look at all these people out here supporting. Look at all the money that you've raised. I mean, what has been their response?
You know, it's hard. They're, you know, 7 and 10. So they're kind of in that age range where they're obviously very aware of what we're doing. And we talk about the nonprofit a lot and they, you know, they see all the kind of events and fundraisers and different thing we're doing. I don't know how much they appreciate that it's like abnormal because that's just their life and that's just what they know. And you only know what you know when you're that age. So they just see mom and dad, you know, doing these things. And so I think that I think it'll be one of those things that start to click as they get a bit older into their teen years and older that they realize, wow, this is something different that my parents were doing from other kids' parents. And, you know, this is a very unique thing that they're doing, but they're, we are trying to use it along the way as good teaching opportunities and showing them, you know, that, you know, how you can face challenges and how you can overcome adversity, both in how we're handling the nonprofit, but in doing specific things like the Ironman racing, et cetera, where, you know, you're taking on a challenge and you're taking that challenge head on. And those challenges are not just applicable to the race itself and how to run and swim and bike and do all those things. That's very applicable to life. You know, how you take on that challenge is how you can take on any challenge. And if you've shown yourself you're successful in one challenge, when you face another challenge, it becomes applicable to that as well. So it's a good analogy of a specific thing that we can kind of lean on as a teaching opportunity for both ourselves and for them.
When you were starting the organization, did you have that in mind? Like, okay, we're going to teach resilience in, you know, physicality and emotionally, spiritually. Was that like from the get, or did it kind of evolve and you're like, oh my gosh, this is why I'm doing it, you know, to have this greater lesson for not only my son and my daughter, but for, you know, the greater community at large?
Yeah, no, I think we really knew that that was something that was important to us from the get-go because, you know, when we started, we still were under the belief that my son was going to just lose his vision and there was nothing we could do about it other than maybe we'll try to raise some money. Maybe we'll try to support a cure, who knows where it'll go, but we're like, he's going to face challenges. And he needs to know how to face those challenges head on and get through them. And we need to set an example for him so he learns how to get through those things as they come. And whether it's vision loss or anything else, he's going to face challenges in life. Everybody will. That's just kind of one of those inevitabilities of life. So pretending like you're going to have this easy life without adversity or challenges, setting yourself up for failure and setting them up for failure as a parent. So teaching them how to face those challenges is a healthy and important thing. So we knew that we wanted to do that from the outset to really give them those skills, start to teach them some of that stuff at a young age and be an example for them.
I love that. And that's the perfect way to phrase it. And I've had like so many different guests on the show over the years, you know, top psychologists and authors, and they always come back to that. Like, if you really want to impart a message, you have to set the example. You have to be the leader in your family. And whether you're preaching about it or you're just living it, that's truly how the message is imparted and what they're really going to believe at the end of the day. You can say whatever you want to say, but it's what you do.
Absolutely. You know, that's 100% the truth. You know, you lead by example, whether it's in business, life, a relationship, all the things, you have to lead by example. It's what you do that matters the most. Saying something is important, but saying something without action to back it up is meaningless. So you really have to have that action and doing what you're saying you're doing. So we try to live it as much as we can.
Yeah. And you talk about relationships a lot. You're very open about co-parenting and navigating that in a healthy way. Can you talk to our listener about how you and your ex-wife are doing that and creating a safe environment for your kids where they still feel safe and nurtured, and their parents just don't live together?
Yeah. So it's obviously hard, right? You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it and pretend like that's an easy thing to do because that would be disingenuous to your listeners and anybody else who's gone through it, because everybody knows that's hard. Even being married and in a relationship is hard, and everybody knows that too. So you have to work at whatever that type of dynamic is, whether you're married or you're co-parenting. You have to find those common grounds of things that you're going to come together on and work together for. We, you know, everybody's divorce is different. We went into a place of, you know, we really didn't have a bad event that, you know, kind of led to it, you know, so we had a, you know, we were always good friends. We just had lost the love and the relationship. So we had that, that underlying basis that we were friends and that we were very aligned on that we wanted the kids to be happy and healthy and try to do as much as we can for them. And we were divorced before we found out about my son's diagnosis. So, it didn't happen afterwards. And so we were already divorced when we found out about this. And it obviously changed a lot in our dynamic and life of, how we're going to co-parent them, because his needs are going to be unique and they're going to change. And we both wanted to make sure that he has all the things he needs, whether it's experiences and traveling and seeing the world while he still can, which was one thing that we took together. We went on a big family trip this last summer, all of us together. It was, my ex-wife, her friend Jeff, both of our parents were there at different times throughout the summer. It was a big, huge family of people all kind of putting the kids first and doing this big thing for him and for the kids and for us. So you just have to really try to focus on the present, what matters and what's in front of you. And the past is the past. You just have to let those things be in the past and try to focus on what's here in front of you. And doing what's right for the kids is super important to both of us.
Yeah. And I love how you said, being in the present and enjoying right now what's going on in this moment so that you can then make the best decision moment to moment to moment. How important has mindfulness been, not only in your parenting journey, but in your athletic journey?
Yeah. So I've talked about this a little bit, and it's when you get a diagnosis like this, it changes everything for you, right? It's, you hear about some people talk about it maybe later in life, if they get like a cancer diagnosis or something really hard like that, they suddenly get this urge to live and be in the present and do all these things they've talked about doing their whole life. And it would be the biggest gift if I could give somebody that feeling without having to have them go through that negative moment that caused that feeling. So for me, it was, this diagnosis that my son has this thing. And now I'm like, wow, he only has potentially a little bit of time left before he loses more vision. We need to show him the world. We need to do all the things we talked about. There is no tomorrow, someday. There's only now. We have to do these things now. And I should have known better. I'm in healthcare. I see these things every day. But, until it happens to you, you kind of don't always really get that urge, that drive, that how important today is, because tomorrow is not guaranteed either in life or in health. So you have to really appreciate the present when you have it and live it to the fullest. So that mindfulness, that being aware in the present, has become super important for our life, our work, the kids, everything that we're taking on. So it's front and center to everything at this point.
How do you navigate, not feelings of guilt, but maybe feelings of guilt of finding your purpose and having this drive and inspiring so many people at the expense of a really tragic health event, in your child and the person you love more than anyone?
Yeah, no, I've struggled with that a lot. That's a really big one for me, because before this, I had, some decent stuff going on in my life. I had a decent career and I had, all the things that you might want. Right. And I was just kind of skating along in life. Like, I feel like maybe some people are, and you're just kind of going through the motions of life. You're just doing all the things that you're supposed to do, but I didn't really have that drive, that purpose and that passion. And I feel like that was something I was always looking for. Like, I want to be inspired deeply by, what I'm doing, but I just didn't have that. And then this happened, and I certainly feel that now in terms of the mission, how important this nonprofit work is for me. Like, I work exceedingly long hours. I take on more than I could have ever imagined that I'm taking on. And I'm doing it all with, just this willingness and this, inspiration and fire to do it all, because it's so important to me. And so, yeah, that came because my son is going through this. And so there is that kind of moment of like, wow, I have this fire and this passion, but it came because my son got this diagnosis. And all I can really fall back on is I feel like the things that happened in my life led me to this point to be ready to take on this challenge and to do all this. And the reason I didn't have that fire and that passion up to that point, and I was just doing the things that I needed to do to be ready to take this on. And now I am, and I can, I can't let that feeling hold me back from being successful, because if I lost that fire and that passion and I got hung up on the thought of, you know, this came at the expense of my son, then I wouldn't be able to be successful in trying to find him a cure and be successful for him. So I try to focus on, you know, what I can do for him and what I'm able to do. And I'm grateful that I've kind of had this, you know, skill set and this knowledge that I've acquired over the years to be able to be here today and do this for him. So that's really what I focus on, but it is a very challenging dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say to the mom or dad listening to this who might have just gotten a diagnosis about their child? What worked for you, or what would you do differently to kind of get through those early days and to find hope and to find passion and purpose?
Well, one of the biggest ones would be that don't try to do it alone. You need a team, you need a community, you need people around you. You need help processing those emotions and those feelings individually and as a family is going to be very hard. And so, especially as a man, like there's that kind of sometimes inherent like need to like stuff it away and, you know, just like, I can handle this and all that kind of stuff. Like that mentality is going to lead you to hard, dark places that might be hard to get out of if you go there. So asking for help is number one. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to hurt and cry and feel the emotions that you're going through. And then with the right help, whether it's family, friends, a therapist, which is what I had at the time, I really leaned on that person to kind of be my place to organize my thoughts and feelings about all this. And that really helped. And that got me into a good place to be, you know, more able to process and handle all these things and move forward. So you have to ask for help. I think that that's the first thing to do.
Yeah, I love that. And especially, like, I love that you address it to men too, because that is like always the clincher, right? It's like your role is to be a protector and a provider, but at the same time, it's like you need to be able to express your emotions too. Otherwise, you know, you're not human.
Yeah. Well, you, at the end of the day, like, yeah, your job is to lead, provide, protect, be strong, all those masculine roles that you have to fulfill, but you cannot do any of those things if you yourself are, you know, internally on an unstable foundation. You have to be on your own stable foundation to be that foundation for other people. And you have to take care of yourself. You have to find a way to be internally healthy so that you can do all those things. And that is mentally, physically, emotionally, all the above. So you have to make sure that you're taking care of yourself to take care of others.
What do you like to do? Like, do you have, is it, you know, cemented into part of your routine? Like, okay, I get up, I, you know, do my, the certain routine. Like, I always am curious about people's morning routines, night routines.
Yeah. You know, it's taken on different shapes and sizes at different times of this journey. There's been really busy stretches where there is just only so many hours in the day and I got to accomplish all of them. And, you know, so the alarm clock gets set earlier and earlier and earlier. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to stay away from that as much as possible, because at the end of the day, like I just said, you have to take care of yourself to take care of others. And I found that the longer that I'm getting up at 3 or 4 in the morning, you know, like that's unsustainable, right? Like you can do it in short stretches to kind of maybe get through something, but then you have to have that recovery period where you, you know, take care of yourself, take those days to get a good night's sleep and get, you know, get your health right. But I'd say, as a general core rule and core principle, I try to do something physically healthy every day. I try to move my body. I get to the gym for, you know, I knew I had this, you know, interview with you today, and I, you know, had a few other meetings before and after it, but I squeezed in a really quick workout. It wasn't the best workout I've ever had. It wasn't my, like, you know, I was like, I could have spent 2 hours in the gym, but I'm like, you know, I'm going to get in there for 30 minutes. I'm going to do a few sets. I'm going to get a little sauna in, and I'm just going to take my time that I need for me today to do that. And it really helps. It makes such a huge difference to, you know, make sure that you make that priority happen and take care of yourself. And then you're so much more capable to take on all the other things. So making physical fitness a priority, trying to, you know, eat well, that really makes a huge difference for me. If I start to slide down a pathway of just eating junk food and candy, which my body certainly loves, but after the fact, it really makes me less happy and less productive. So, you know, focusing on my physical health, and then really, no matter what, really setting aside that time for the kids too, at the end of the day, when they're here for activities and just going to, you know, karate or gym or whatever they have going on that day, and trying to be present and a part of all that really balances the everything out, because that's ultimately why I'm doing all this, and what we're doing is to, you know, have that special time with them. So you have to focus on some degree of balance, no matter how much you're taking on. And then if, you know, again, in my late evening hours or early morning hours, I'm taking on more to get these things done, I do that. But without those other things, you just, it starts to fall out of balance, and then you just don't want to do all that. And then you start to burn out and all that. So you have to really focus on, these are the core things that are important to me today. This is why I'm doing all this. And this is how I'm going to stay healthy to be able to do all these things.
And that's so hard too, right? Like when you are burning the candle at both ends, to remember your why and to remember like all of the, you know, quote unquote boring things that you have to do so that you can show up as an amazing dad, as an amazing leader. That's hard. It's not easy. So I love that you just said that. And you work full time too. So it's not like you have any kind of leeway. You have to be really disciplined. But I think if you're a triathlete, that's probably not a huge hurdle for you.
You know, discipline is obviously important. Discipline is doing the things that you need to do, not that you want to do, because that's what discipline is. You know, if you're just doing the things you want to do all the time, then we'd be, you know, just like, you know, going to, you know, play sports and going to on vacation and just hanging out and having a good time and seeing your friends all the time. You'd be doing all the things you want to do. Discipline is doing the things that you know you need to do and not want to do. So doing the hard things, doing them consistently, and sticking to it. So yeah, it's super important to have discipline when you're trying to accomplish certain things. And that discipline then buys you the freedom to have the other time. If you're disciplined in your roles and your tasks, you're more effective, you're more efficient. You do get your time back because, you know, you're focused on the things that are important and getting it done instead of going in all these different directions, you know, playing on my phone and being distracted and all this other stuff. That's how you're going to, you know, lead into having less time for the things that matter and then that are important to you. So discipline, very important.
I know. I love that you just said that. Cause like, I will so get into and procrastination avoidance. I'm such a rebel anyway. I always have been, but then it's like, I have to rebel against the rebel in me to be disciplined and to get off TikTok or whatever, you know, to stop escaping so that I can then have all of this time. And then like, yeah, like you said, the time just seems to open up for you and then you can really 10X your achievement.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah. Modern distractions are a huge problem for every one of us, you know, and I think acknowledging it and being aware of it is really important because it's a problem, right? You know, it's invasive, it's addictive for a reason. Like they know what they're doing. They want you on their apps and it's hard to do. So you sometimes just physically have to remove yourself from the situation, like take your phone, throw it in the corner, turn it off, do whatever you gotta do. I've had periods where I do like blocking apps where you physically can't get back into it. And I'll set the full like 8 or 10 hours of the day.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah. Right. But I block like those apps, you know, like sometimes if I know, like I've got to be productive, I'm feeling like I don't want to do this today. I'm feeling very distractible. I know I could get sucked down the rabbit hole of just playing on my phone all day. Like you got the discipline comes where you go, boom, block. It's done for 8 hours. I cannot touch this, you know, app. And you know, that helps. So, you know, like little tricks like that, like use them, you know, like just do what you got to do sometimes. And that's okay. And then there's other days where you're like, nah, I don't need it. I'm feeling good. And you put your phone away and you can use it for little healthy breaks, you know, a minute here or there and just kind of recharge, reset, and then go back to what you're doing. But, you know, you got to be self-aware of what your limitations are and your needs and act accordingly.
Have you always been very self-aware?
No, I would say I spent a lot of time in my life being much less self-aware. You know, I did challenging things in the sense of like getting through like med school and residency and all that kind of stuff. But as a general, like awareness of myself and my surroundings, people in my life, all that kind of stuff, I was very not aware. It was something I really feel like I gained through adversity, you know, going through first divorce and then, you know, what's going on with my son. I think that those things shaped that part of me in a positive way. And again, like I wish this wasn't the theme of some things in life where it's that adversity that kind of teaches you and grooms you and you can come out of those things better on the other side. But you know, that is the reality that, you can learn a lot from tough situations in your life, tough moments and adversity. So If you're in one of those moments, don't shy away from it. Embrace it. Should you go, okay, this is my opportunity to show what I'm made of, to grow and get better. And you can.
I love that. I love that. Well, I think we are, oh my gosh, we are at the end of time. Steve, if there were any final message that you would want to leave with the listener about your life, your work, or anything that we've talked about today, what would that be?
Yeah, I already talked about living life to the fullest and being aware. So if my story can motivate you to do something today and live in the present, I would really want that more than anything for you, to start to appreciate what's in front of you and to make plans to do something tomorrow, the next day, and continually live life to its fullest, because it truly is a gift. You don't know what can be taken away, whether it's your vision, like my son is facing, your health in some other way, or there's many other terrible things that can happen at any given moment. So truly appreciate life, live it to the fullest. And I hope my story can help put you in that place to want to do that.
Beautifully said. And how can our listener find out more about you, your charity, and, you know, just connect with you if they feel called to?
Definitely. So we're in all the usual places, social media. I'm Dad First Blindness. You can just search for that and you'll track me down. Like I said, I might not respond right away because I do try to put hard stops on those things so that I'm not constantly there. But I do share a lot about my personal life and myself through that page. Our nonprofit has its own Instagram page, A Race Against Blindness, as well as our website, araceagainstblindness.org. So there's a number of ways you can connect with us. Just reach out if our story motivates you in any way, or you're interested in what we're doing. We love to connect with people and just have people who are interested in our journey. That's one of the greatest ways that you can support us, is just following along. You know, obviously donations and all those things are super important to us, but just the no cost way that's really impactful for us is just, you know, being a part, sharing our story with people that, you know, in your networks and your communities, if this was something that impacted you. So those things all make a huge difference for us, and we genuinely appreciate it.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time, for squeezing us in your very busy schedule.
Oh, and it's my pleasure.
Yeah. I'm just honored to share your story and your son's, and just, I pray that, you know, there will be a cure, and you're a huge part of that.
Yeah, we are very close. So there's lots of exciting stuff that you can find out on our pages about all that. So we are going to get there.
You have been listening to the Motherhood Unstressed podcast, where we navigate the beautiful chaos of motherhood together. For more inspiration and insights, please visit our website at motherhoodunstressed.com, or you can visit me on social at Motherhood Unstressed. Remember, you are not alone in this journey. Until next time, stay unstressed, empowered, and embrace the joy of motherhood. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.